Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, September 23rd, 2015. Happy autumn. And this says, before the first cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Yes, we flip to autumn at 4:21 a.m. Eastern time this morning. So happy autumn. Happy fall, everybody. Hopefully the summer switches and the places where it's still baking hot turns off and you get some of the nice weather that we have here. It is currently 57 degrees and fair, according to my cell phone, in upstate New York. And it actually feels pretty nice. The sun is out. I think it got up to like 73 yesterday. I mean, a little cooler than I like it, but it definitely was pleasant. So, where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show AI Barbie Biotech Kill Switch Drone Swarms and GMO DNA. And I had a lot of notes for the show yesterday. We ended up, where did we even end up? Because I always add lots of stuff I didn't get to in case you were really into what I was talking about. And I doubt there's very many of you, but I hope there's a few. I hope there's a few of you. I don't even remember what we ended up with. There's so much crap here. But, oh, I know. We were looking at the drone swarms and some of the stuff that DARPA's doing. They're not only doing it with the Navy and some of the ships on top of the water, subs underneath the water, but now their new project is this Gremlin project where they are looking for bids to create many little tiny drones. And I don't think they'd be like tiny, tiny, but small drones, definitely not the size of a Predator, like maybe the size of a triangle that could shoot things like lasers eventually, I'm sure. Especially since they now are talking about putting those on combat planes and launch large payloads of these little drones to be able to spy and attack. But let's see where I want to go to today. We talked about a lot of stuff yesterday, and I had a couple things lined up here that we never actually got to yesterday. We've been talking about DNA. We talked about some of the new edible vaccines and some of the proper ways that they've discovered to get this technology into our bodies that are most effective. One happens to be intranasal. Intranasal can cross the blood-brain barrier, and that's where, with their new voice recognition software to be able to diagnose schizophrenia, I believe it was. We then did a story right after that about this new drug to treat mental disorders that will be sniffed right up the nose. And yeah, how great is that? We also found out that another way to get this stuff into our body, all this newfangled technology, was through the edible route. And that is because there was a story out of the National Institute of Health talking about, and I listed that in the notes for the last couple days, talking about how through the mucosal lining of the small intestine, that is a great route to get nanotech and some of this RNAi technology, again, across the blood-brain barrier and into your bloodstream. Well, the other route was transdermally. And I think in one of the clips that we were listening to, I don't remember if it was yesterday, like all these days just bleed together. Over the last few days, though, we heard a clip and they had talked about using transdermal patches and how great this is going to be for the future. And yes, you know, now that we have 271 new vaccines sitting in the pipeline, you know, that's not going to go over too well when they see little Johnny line up, because you got a lot more vaccinations to go now and they start coming at little Johnny with a needle. You know, in African nations, they tend to now run and grab their children and become fugitives when they hear the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is coming. Didn't you read that story? There was something back maybe a year or two ago. Again, everything just kind of bleeds together. But there was a story about Bill and Melinda Gates sponsoring some vaccination program down in Africa, and they ended up holding them at gunpoint, but people ran with their kids. So, yeah, I mean, nobody's going to want needles coming at them. And then there are those who are fully aware that the vaccines are poison that are being injected into their children, and we're just human guinea pigs. So, you know, anyone with half a brain needs to understand that these new vaccines are not the vaccines that we knew when we were kids. Okay, those we're using, and they might have been putting some funky stuff in there. I mean, at least the adjuvants, but at least they were utilizing old school immunology. They were injecting you with something that your body would recognize as that illness, whether it be live, killed, attenuated, it didn't matter. I mean, there were different issues with each one, but the fact of the matter, plain and simple, to boil it down, is that they were injecting you with the material that they wanted your body to build a defense against. And hey, that worked pretty well for some people. You know, there were still issues, but I think generally speaking, it worked pretty well. Today, they are putting these, I mean, we know the nanotechnology that could either have a payload and be directed someplace. I mean, I'm not sure if they're at the point, but we saw a couple videos about self-replicating nanobots to treat cancer, and everything that we heard from Eric Drexler with your desktop nanorobotics factory. I mean, I think that that's already way down the road of creation. We found out also that they're using RNAi technology to be able to flip switches on and off within your DNA to be able to then prevent your body from producing an antibody, or to make your body produce something that it wasn't before. And they're really, really screwing with the immune system now, stuff that I don't believe they fully understand. We discussed the microbiome yesterday as well, and how that connection between your vagus nerve from your gut to your brain is definitely a potential entry point for, once they get this newfangled medicine into your body, if they wanted to manipulate and control your thoughts, manipulate and control your brain chemicals, it's a possibility. I mean, they've started to crack all of these mysteries on how to control the stuff. So anyway, we have a bunch of stories about all this now that I'd like to go over. There was one that came out a few days ago, 21st of September, titled "New Painless Nano Patch Can Detect Diseases in the Blood." And then it says a blood test with zero injections. Hey, I mean, who wouldn't go for that? Yes, well, the keyword is nanopatch. Researchers in Australia have developed a patch lined with microscopic needles. Yeah, how much better can that be? That can quickly and painlessly detect disease-carrying proteins in the blood, potentially replacing the need for needle-based blood samples and time spent waiting for lab analysis. Based on a similar patch that could one day deliver injection-free vaccines through the skin, and I have that story queued up as well. This diagnostic nano patch has been designed to identify diseases such as malaria and dengue fever. Oh, guess where they're going to test this out in? Which are prevalent in remote areas and developing regions where people may not have the resources to routinely draw blood and analyze it. The concept here is that we could just put a patch on the skin and this could give a result based on what it finds in your blood, said one of the researchers, Simone Corey from the University of Queensland. The microneedle arrays can capture proteins that circulate around in the body that are normally tested for in blood samples. And once the patches have done their job, they are removed from the skin and exposed to specially formulated detection reagents. The patches are like small chips made from gold-coated silicon wafers lined with countless, I'd love a count, countless, means many, 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 countless microneedles that are so small you won't even feel them piercing the skin. Yeah, I want lots of those. They can reportedly detect the presence of disease-carrying proteins within an hour, which means if the team can get them on the market, you won't have to see your general practitioner to get your blood taken and then come back a few days later to get the results. You could just go for a lunch break. And, you know, there were a few stories on this technology and then on the needleless vaccines, the vaccine patch. And I was thinking to myself, you know, we've been covering a lot of stories about, will robots take your jobs over the last year or so, because it's been in the news and a lot of the tech leaders have been alluding to that fact that, yeah, here pretty soon between robots and software, there's going to be a large portion of the 21st century jobs that are going to go poof. But don't worry about it because it'll be a utopia, right? Uh-huh. Well, you know, what gave me a little bit of pleasure was to think that these same doctors that are smiling and pointing to the CDC schedule last time I was there for the pediatrician visit, saying, oh, yeah, don't worry. Make sure you keep your eye out for the commercial for that new meningitis vaccine, pointing to the schedule. They'll tell you all about it on the commercial for your next time that you're here. You know, there. She was also the same pediatrician that back 9 years ago when they wanted to start injecting her with all these things. I said, well, why are we putting formaldehyde into a child? And she looked at me and rolled her eyes and says, you're one of those parents. Yes, those same doctors might be put out of a job by this technology. So it gave me a little bit of evil pleasure. All right. Anyway, back to the story. They've so far only been tested on mice. So this is this countless microneedles. But Corey told the Sydney Morning Herald that they've been granted funding. Oh, look, by the Australian National Health and Medical Research Council. So that must be equivalent to our National Institute of Health. That's also sprinkling money for all these crazy health projects for the development of commercial prototypes for humans that will likely be made up from a polymer or a plastic instead of gold-coated silicon. Yes, those are only reserved for the elite. To keep the manufacturing cost down, you get the plastic with the BPA. Just kidding. the next step, other than figuring out how to get them to work safely and effectively on humans, step right up, is to develop what the researchers are calling a, quote, microfluidic detection card, unquote. The team expects to have this and a clinical trial with human volunteers ready in the next couple years. It's just amazing that, and people will sign up for this. We will be able to slot the diagnostic patch into the card that does the washing and detection steps, so you don't need a lab at all to do the work. So there you go, phlebotomist. You're out of a job too, Corey said. And as treatable as malaria is treatable, detection of the disease can avoid overtreatment in people that don't have it. Overtreatment leads to resistance and is one of the biggest issues with malaria is the resistance to existing treatments. The team will want to get a wriggle on it, says. Nano patches have become the next big thing over the past year or so, with researchers in the U.S. working on a new insulin patch for diabetics that could potentially replace daily injections, and vaccine patches that are set to begin clinical trials in the U.S. in 2017. Earlier this year, it was also announced that a tiny patch-like device could help treat or prevent peanut allergies by painlessly exposing a patient to a small amount of peanut extract. Now, that is interesting, having been someone who went through 8 years of allergy injections for dust and dust mites. I was very allergic for many years, and my allergist, which at the time, back, we're talking, this was probably early to mid-90s, all the way up through the end of the 90s. Back in those days, they still did not call allergists immunologists. They kind of had them separated as a, I don't want to say a job, but I guess in the medical field, I tried to argue, and I like to argue with doctors, they hate me, but I do a lot of research, as you guys know, and so I always have something to say about something, and when they tell me something that sounds like a load of bullshit, I call them on it, and I'm like, well, I read blah, 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 and they're like, oh, you read that on the internet, but, you know, I had experimented on myself for years, as well as read, and I had conversations with my doctor about the connections between autoimmune disease, allergies, and immunology, and he told me that they had nothing to do with each other, and I said, well, look, you know, when I'm having an allergic reaction to something, it's just my body overreacting to an external influence that normally would be, you know, something that my body could deal, but is misidentifying it for whatever, finding it to be a poison, and my immune system is going into overdrive to try to prevent me being attacked by whatever this foreign organism is. In autoimmune disease, it's very similar, except that instead of it being an external influence, now your body is misidentifying stuff within itself that's a foreign organism that it needs to mount an attack and destroy. Very similar to the way that your immune system would, even if it was some sort of pathogen. So I truly believe, and now you see, if you start looking and you're reading these stories about all this different stuff they're working on, immunology, allergy, and these disorders with the immune system are all one. So it has been shown that it is the same mechanism within your body. I'm like, I can't even believe this dude went to college for, what, 8 years? I mean, I don't know what the education is for an allergist, but all these years he went to school, and he argued with me that they were two different systems, and I know that wasn't part of the research back then, but all you had to do was put on that little common sense hat that sits right on the little tip of your head, and it made a lot of sense, especially if you were one of the sufferers that had suffered for a long time. Anyway, all right, now, before I get off this topic, there was one more story that I found, here it is, this morning. So the one we just read was out of Science Alert. There was another one that looks like it must be a very similar, if not the same, technology. But this one's out of phys.org. And they gave a lot more details. So I want to read this one. Molecular diagnostics at home. Chemists design rapid, simple, inexpensive tests using what? Oh, DNA. Yeah, they didn't mention DNA in that other one. They were like, oh, yeah, we could just test for diseases. Well, it's actually a portable at-home DNA test. Chemists at the University of Montreal, so this is a little bit different because it was out of Australia, used DNA molecules to rapidly develop inexpensive medical diagnostic tests that only take a few minutes to perform. Their findings, which officially will be published tomorrow in the Journal of American Chemical Society, may aid in the efforts to build point-of-care devices for quick medical diagnoses of various diseases ranging from, now they only mentioned dengue and malaria, this mentions a lot other things, cancer, gotta have the home cancer test, allergies, yep, get rid of the allergies, autoimmune diseases, how would they test for that? That's very interesting, sexually transmitted STDs, and many others. The new technology may also drastically impact global health due to its low cost and ease of use, according to the research team. The rapid and easy to use diagnostic tests are made of DNA and use one of the simplest forces in chemistry called steric effects, a repulsion force that arises when atoms are brought too close together. To detect a wide array of protein markers that are linked with various diseases. The design was created by a research group of Alexis Vallée-Bilsleil, a professor at the Department of Chemistry at the University of Montreal. And despite the power of current diagnostic tests, a significant limitation is that they still require complex laboratory procedures.
Noise. Oh, no.
Oh, here we go. Hold on. All right. I dropped my lighter. That would be catastrophic. Anyway, they still require complex laboratory procedures. Patients must wait days or even weeks for the results of blood tests, and the blood sample has to be transported to a centralized lab, its content analyzed by trained personnel, and the results sent back to the doctor's office. Wow, look at all the middlemen they're going to cut out with this technology. Like I said, this is pretty scary. I mean, they could do home testing, and yeah, it's great if you could like detect cancer early or diagnose your autoimmune disease from the comfort of your own living room. But on the other hand, how long is it going to be before they're using these little DNA tests to say, oh, you have a mental disease. Oh, you have this chemical. Oh, you have that one. Let's make sure we inoculate you, you know, through secret means. I mean, they have all these ways now they can get this stuff into you. I just don't like any of this at all. I personally care about my personal privacy. I mean, I talk about health issues I've had over the years because I've lived this shit for the last 25 years. But you know what? I don't need that to be an open book. I don't need every government official scrolling through to see what issues I had, what medications I took, what my DNA profile that they made me get when I was in the hospital at 30. I was 38. Having my first child, they're like, oh, you know, you have all kinds of warning signs because of your age that you could have genetic defects in your child. So we got to do DNA testing on you there, too, and put it in your record. You know, I was guinea pig extraordinaire. I lived this shit. I don't want these people having access to my records to then do with whatever they please. You know, that's the frightening part of this. Once they start working on, you know, we've looked at them talking about how even stress can damage your DNA for future generations. Any bad lifestyle choices, the Big Mac you ate or the pizza or the beer you drank damaged your DNA. Oh, my God. You just knocked an IQ point off a future child. You know, how long is it going to be before they start determining who is good breeding stock, who is allowed to do certain things based upon their genetic profile? You know, guys, this is a real slippery slope. And I don't trust any of these people that are in charge of this stuff. I mean, yeah, like I've said before, I'm sure that Alexis Vandebilzier, the head of this chemistry department that's working on this, doesn't have any evil intentions. But once they release the technology to then these crazies that are out there, it's gone. You can't reel it back in. And this is going to be the wave of the future. I mean, don't think that, and phlebotomists out there and primary care physicians better be watching your back. You know, you're doing all of the dirty deeds for these, for the CDC and biopharma who, you know, promise you Hawaiian vacations for getting 1,000 vaccines into children. But I'm going to tell you what, the joke's going to be on you. When you find yourself out of a job and you're standing on a street corner with a sign that says physicals for food or something, you know, this is the end of all of us from many, many different directions. All right, back to the story. If we can move testing to the point of care or even at home, that's what I said, from the comfort of your lounger, it would eliminate the lag time between treatment and testing. And it would enhance the effectiveness of medical interventions. You know, and then they can have one central doctor with e-medicine. That was something that we started selling when I was still doing engineering, where you can have a doctor in a central location and have a web camera, basically. And they even have little robots now in the hospitals that can get wheels and cart around, and the robot itself with the doctor controlling it can go from patient room to patient room and have a conversation with them. And then when they hook up different sensors that are Wi-Fi enabled, let's say, that are throwing information down into a database so the doctor can see what your oxygen levels are. They have some real-time blood testing on you. They got your blood pressure. They got a urine test this morning when you took a leak. You know, I mean, they can do a lot of diagnostics remotely. Andy can see you. You know, and all they need then at the end user location in the hospital, their doctor's office, is a physician's assistant. The physician could be running 10 offices from his, you know, his office at home. All right, anyway, do we want to go into all the details? Well, there's only another paragraph. It says the sensing principle is straightforward. The diagnostically relevant protein, if present, binds to an electroactive DNA strand and limits the ability of this DNA to hybridize to its complementary strand located on the surface of the gold electrode. Francesco Ricci, a professor at the University of Rome who has also participated in the study, explains that this novel signaling mechanism produces sufficient changes in current to be measured using inexpensive electronics similar to those in the home glucose test meter used by diabetics to check their blood sugar. And yes, I have one of those from when I was pregnant with gestational diabetes. And they work really quick. You little pinprick. Doesn't even hurt with the little lance thing that you just kind of back up and let it go, and you dab it on the thing, and then you stick it into the machine, and it tells you what your blood sugar levels are. Using this DNA-based assay, the researchers were able to detect multiple protein markers directly in whole blood in fewer than 10 minutes, even if their concentration is a million times less concentrated than glucose. A great advantage of this DNA-based electrochemical test is that its sensing principle can be generalized to many different targets, allowing us to build inexpensive devices that could detect dozens of disease markers in less than 5 minutes, either in the doctor's office or at home. A patent has been submitted for this invention. Well, they better hurry up because the guys in Australia are working on it too. And many other applications are envisaged, including pathogen detection in food or water and therapeutic drug monitoring at home, a feature which could drastically improve the efficiency of various classes of drugs and treatment. Yes, so home, we have prescribed you to be dosed with your anti-establishment drug that we discovered you needed when we took your voice patterns and you sounded like you had a mental illness. And we noticed that your therapeutic drug levels in your blood supply are not up to snuff. Let's call out the micro drones. Oh, guys, when I, you know, I mean, I've been doing this stuff for at least 3 years here on this show, if you can even believe it. 5 days a week, or at least I try to. And then before this, probably another 9 or 10 months for the WTF show that, you know, it's funny, but Rode even said it in chat the other day. This could have gone over on the, this really is like the incarnation of that WTF show, just not stupid stories, like real crazy, scary stories. And, you know, it gets to the point after almost 4 years straight of every day scanning technology stories like this. It really, it's pretty unbelievable that this is the point that we're at, and we are just going full speed ahead toward that cliff like lemmings, and there's nothing we can do to stop it. How are we going to stop this? Robo doctors and nanopatches. And here's the one about the vaccines. I'll read this and make it brief because then we got other stuff we're going to go on to. This dissolvable patch can painlessly deliver vaccines without needles, so it's not countless microneedles, apparently. This says no more injections. A new dissolvable patch has delivered flu vaccines just as effectively as a needle in recent clinical trials in Japan, and it could replace the painful, tricky to administer, and for many of us, terrifying injections that put people off being immunized. And of course, as we have this Healthy People 2020 Act, Vaccinate All Children Act, and 271 new vaccinations waiting in the pipeline, yes, they need to get rid of that scary needle. And what's even more interesting is they did the clinical trials in Japan with that flu vaccine that we read just a few days ago was a big and utter failure. I think, didn't it say that it only covered like 1% of people were immune? That was a really, actually, there were two studies that we read about the failures of these, some of these newest vaccines that, of course, they're using us to test them on. The patches, oh, it is. The patch is made up of tiny microneedles that dissolve. What? The patch is made up of tiny microneedles that dissolve painlessly into the skin. Now, I'm not sure about you, but I know I don't want countless tiny microneedles dissolving into my skin. And so far, trials have shown that it is not only safe to use, but it can deliver an immune response that's just as strong, if not stronger in some cases, than vaccine delivered via injection. The idea behind the patch is that it won't just make giving vaccines far more appealing. Yeah, they could put pretty colors and pictures on them and get the kids all to line up. Good old Disney characters. It could also slow the spread of disease in developing countries by making it easier to vaccinate people in regions without regular access to doctors and nurses. We were excited to see that our new microneedle patch is just as effective as the needle-delivered flu vaccine, which is close to bad, non-zero, and in some cases even more effective. Lead researcher Shinsaku Nakagawa from Osaka University told the press, "We have shown that the patch is safe and that it works well, and since it is also painless and very easy for non-trained people to use, yes, your neighbor could slap it on your arm." "We think it could bring about major changes in the way we administer vaccines globally." Yay! Bravo! Just what we need. Easier ways to administer global vaccines to everyone. Says his is not the first research team to try to pursue a viable alternative to injections. And don't forget, we also have intranasal and edible. For years, I figured we had to do transdermal here because we hadn't really touched on this one. For years, scientists have been developing microneedles made from polymers and metals. Yeah, just what we want. But these needles have a tendency to break off in the skin, and leave fragments behind. Yeah. So Nakagawa and his team took a different approach and created their tiny needles using, I don't know what this is, hyaluronic acid, hyaluronic acid, H-Y-A-L-U-R-O-N-I-C, hyaluronic acid, a substance that occurs naturally in our bodies to cushion our joints. Oh, yeah, so what, are you going to end up with arthritis after getting these years later? And the idea paid off. These are the first dissolvable microneedles to progress to clinical trials. The patch works by being stuck onto the body like a very simple Band-Aid, causing the microneedles to painlessly pierce the patient's skin. And once applied, these needles instantly begin to dissolve into the bloodstream, carrying with them the desired vaccine or drug. Yay! And to test the effectiveness of their new patch, the team took a group of 40 adult male volunteers and they vaccinated them against 3 different flu strains. Half were given vaccines via needle and half via the new dissolvable patch. And not only did the participants experience no adverse reactions as a result of the immunizations, but the follow-up blood test revealed that the microneedles had provided them with a stronger immune response to one of the flu strains than the injection. Look out, people, here they come. The results have been published in the Journal of Biomaterials, and if further trials can be replicated, these findings can replicate these findings and prove that microneedle patches are not only safe to use, but are also an effective way to deliver vaccines. I hope Billy Gates is invested. We could be very close to putting an end to immunization injections for good. They're gonna hide the pickle, guys. That's what this is all about, hiding the pickle. They have 271 new vaccines waiting in the pipeline, and there's bazillions more to come with DARPA and National Institute of Health funding and Project BioShield sprinkled all over the place, DNA switch flipping and nanobots. Precision medicine and the bioeconomy. Who's going to buy into that when it's somebody coming at you with 10,000 injections? Nobody. But hey, a little happy nano patch that has, you know, smiley faces and pretty colors. We could do them in the colors of the iPhones, the whatever they are, their eye computers, they all in ones that they made all the pretty colors that went crazy. Yeah, let's do them in pretty designer colors and shapes. And then it'll be a big hit. It doesn't hurt. Don't worry about it. Just take your little patch. It'll make you happy. Get rid of all your problems. And it says, just imagine a world where you can stick a patch on your arm to protect yourself against measles, whooping cough, and tetanus. Seriously, what a time to be alive. That's literally what it said at the end of that story. Oh my God. I mean, it is ramped up to the point of complete psyop, jump on board. Otherwise, you're a danger. You are a danger to society. You're going to infect people. That's what they're going to tell you. You will be quarantined and corralled. And, you know, here we go. So we've read about some of the ways they're making these vaccines. I mean, even some of the traditional vaccines, like the MMR, I believe, has that strain of aborted human fetal cells. We read there was a study from a doctor at Stanford University that had talked about her research where she's finding those fragments of aborted fetal DNA is attaching itself to DNA of your children that get this vaccine. And she thinks that it's causing some of the autism issues that we're having. Well, we've also talked about the microbiome and how with some of these edible vaccines, and I mean, even the GMO food, anything that goes into your system and gets into your small intestine can affect your microbiome. And your microbiome is directly connected to your brain. Well, I ran into a story this morning at a Big Think that is along those same lines, kind of talking about everything we've talked about. But this is pretty interesting, the way that they phrased it and explained it. Foreign DNA trapped inside of you may be changing your behavior. What? Yes, it sounded like a lunatic theory that I brought up and we talked about, but guess what? It's not. No, it's true. There may be another human's DNA trapped inside of you. What? Yes. But while it may sound like a weird science sequel to The Exorcist, according to Peter Kramer at the University of Padua, quote, a very large number of different human and non-human individuals are all incessantly struggling inside us for control, unquote. And soon to be, if not already, nanobots. I'm telling you guys, they're cracking all of this information to be able to take full control at a cellular level. Kramer and his colleagues, Paula Brenson, just published a paper about this strange phenomenon called microchimerism. So that's a new term in regards to this. I haven't heard of microchimerism yet, but hey, maybe we'll read about that tomorrow. They just published a paper about this strange phenomenon called microchimerism that influences our behavior. Basically, we pick up DNA, perhaps in the womb from a twin, a subsumed twin, an older sibling, our mothers, or later in life from a pregnancy. Yeah, and they don't mention DNA that you're getting in vaccines or crap that's in your food. I mean, we got to talk about this bovine leukemia virus that they're now discovering. It's been in the U.S. milk for many years. I think it said that they discovered it in the 50s. And, you know, they always said that bovine leukemia virus in the milk doesn't affect humans. Don't worry about it. And so they left it in the milk. We've been drinking it all this time, and now they're finding it in breast cancer tissue. And they're going, uh-oh, we got a problem, Clyde. Yeah. I mean, anything that we eat, and anyone who's listened to LaVon, she has echoed this many times, anything we eat leaves remnants within our cells as we break it down and consume it, okay? So anyway, this mention like your mother, your siblings, later in life from a pregnancy, yes, because if you have a child, their DNA forever circulates within your blood after you've had that child. But in one study, perhaps 63% of women who had children were harboring male cells in their brains. And yeah, that was how they studied it. They looked for the Y chromosome since they would have X chromosomes, so it wouldn't be easy to tell them apart. And it says, while it's been studied that the bacteria in our guts can influence everything from our mood to our appetites, less is known about the shadow human DNA that may sway our decisions and our feelings. This foreign DNA could potentially influence which hand is dominant or your propensity to develop Alzheimer's. Yeah, well, we found out there's all kinds of other ways, too, that we could be developing Alzheimer's. Like, what? Oh, nobody is testing the food supply for bovine spongiform encephalopathy? No! Right? We looked at that. Malformed proteins from BSE, a.k.a. mad cow, chronic wasting disease, the CJD and CVJD are all malformed proteins that are very, very, very similar to the mad cow disease. And I don't think I ever got to this, but I found a couple stories back in 2008. There was a lawsuit. The cattle producers, when we had that big spate of mad cow, and it might have been before 2008, but I think the ruling, the final ruling came in 2008. The cattle producers wanted to test every cow for mad cow disease, and the Bush administration put a block on it and took it to federal court, and the courts came down and ruled, guess what? Nope. You are not going to be testing all the cattle that go into the food chain We changed the rules. Down cows don't go in. Nerve tissue doesn't go in. And that's fine. That's all we need to test. And they blocked cattle farmers. And it was one large cattle farmer in particular. I don't remember the details, but maybe we'll get into cattle tomorrow. We'll do this leukemia virus and the mad cow. And that large producer of cattle was blocked, and across the board they blocked it. They will not give them the tests to do the test for mad cow for every cow. And so that's the end of that. So fuck knows what, okay, is what it's come down to. The last 2 or 3 weeks of the show has pretty much explained that. And now with all these crazy vaccines, who knows what they're putting into any of this stuff. It's a free-for-all, and you don't need to know because we just got rid of all the labels. Anyway, this foreign DNA could potentially influence which hand is dominant or your propensity for Alzheimer's. And in one study of a Danish woman who'd been pregnant, epidemiologists determined that the leftover Y chromosome improved the overall health of women. What's stranger still is that microchimerism of male cells in women occurred even when they'd never given birth to a son. And, yeah, they're right about this. The DNA possibly transferred by an older brother. I don't know about that. Or sexual intercourse with a man. There was a study about that. Every partner you've ever had has left fragments of DNA. So you better get used to it. I mean, it's what we are just starting to learn now is that our body is constantly absorbing DNA from other things. And it can change you. It seems then that the human body is far from fixed at birth and instead picks up DNA the way our browser does cookies. Oh, you know what? There's actually a video here. Hold on. Let's see. I don't know if I have anything running in the background here, but we'll at least check it out. Let's see if I can get this up. Well, maybe or maybe not. We got to get Skype running first. So I might give this up if no, but come on. I want to hear this. Mornings are hard, guys. That's why it's called before the first cup, right? Yeah, Skype won't even like kick into gear here. I had to close it because I told you every time it's open, my, all right. We'll see if we can get in. Every time it's open, my browsers don't go anywhere. Oh. All right, one more try. Everyone take a sip of coffee. I get a breath. And if I can remember my name, we'll be golden. There we go. And how to spell it, too. Here we go. Maybe if Skype loads. Here we go. If Skype ever loads. All right, we're going to try it. And maybe I can answer. And I think we're connected. All right. Here's an embedded video from Brian Sykes, founder and chairman of Oxford Genetics. What does everyone need to know about genetics? I don't know. Let's find out. Oh, but you know what? This might...
Two determinants that your gene...
Hold on. We've got to unplug speakers. And turn this up.
Genes determine everything you do. They don't. But if you like, it's like the deck of cards that you're dealt at birth. What you do with that deck, like any card game, depends a lot on your choices. But it is influenced by those cards, those genes that you got when you were born. What I've enjoyed about genetics is looking to see what it tells us about where we've come from, because those pieces of DNA, they came from somewhere. They weren't just sort of plucked out of the air. They came from ancestors. And it's a very good way of finding out about your ancestors, not only who they are, but just imagining their lives. You're made up of DNA from thousands and millions of ancestors who've lived in the past, most of them now dead, but they've survived, they've got through, they've passed their DNA on to their children. and it's come down to you. It doesn't matter who you are. You could be the president, you could be the prime minister, you could be the head of a big corporation, you could be a taxi driver, you could be someone who lives on the street. But the same is true of everybody. I'm very proud of all my ancestors that have got their DNA through to me, and I think everybody should be, particularly in America, because all of you have ancestors that took a lot of trouble to get here, whether it was across the frozen wastes of Siberia or more recently on ships from Europe, or unfortunately ships from Africa against your ancestors' wills. But everybody's undergone an important and difficult journey to get here. Well, no doubt, most of the funding for the advances in genetics, for example, the complete sequencing of the human genome, has come from an ambition to learn more about health issues. And certainly, there have been good strides made, perhaps not as successful as was once thought, to identify the genes involved in diseases that most of us will eventually suffer from if we live that long, things like cancer and high blood pressure, diabetes, and so on. They actually have extremely complicated genetic ingredients, but they are slowly being unraveled. That's where most of the new technology has been discovered and been developed for healthcare purposes. For the ancestry use, which is non-controversial, I mean, the healthcare is in a way thinking about the future, predicting what DNA tells you about what's going to happen to you in the future, which is always uncertain. But looking at the past, it's certain because you have a past. There's no speculation that your DNA came from your ancestors, it did. So that's uncontroversial in that respect. But the technology for exploring that, which is making leaps and bounds, has come through the healthcare benefits. So I think those are the two main things that people are learning about themselves and who they're related to, where they've come from. And that does, and I know from experience, that does add a lot to what people's sense of identity. It's not for everybody, not everyone's very interested in it, but a lot of people are, and I think that's a very good thing.
What kind of video was that? I mean, I expected like he was going to give us some scientific breakout. All right, so yeah, now we all understand what DNA is. All right, last story. We got a couple minutes left here. Let's see if we can find this. I caught a story right as I was coming downstairs. Actually, there's two of them. UK scientists are now, this came out yesterday, seeking permission to genetically modify, you knew it was coming, human embryos. And they will be the first to do it with national approval. A group of stem cell researchers in the UK has applied for permission to genetically modify human embryos in an attempt to better understand what happens in the earliest stages of human development and hopefully reduce the incidence of miscarriage. The request will, quote, be considered in due course, unquote, according to the local regulatory body, the Human Fertilization and Embryology Authority. Is that a UK authority? I've never heard of that before. This application comes just a few months after researchers in China admitted altering the genes of human embryos to try and eliminate a genetic blood disorder. China's changing an embryo's genes for therapeutic purposes in this way is illegal in most other parts of the world due to concerns that people will use the technology to create designer babies. Yeah, but in the United States, didn't they already approve that in vitro fertilization using the three parents? I believe they did. But in the UK, it is possible for research purposes with approval from HFEA, which is that Human Fertilization and Embryology Authority. Now, researchers have sought this approval for the first time, and if permission is granted, it will be the first time a national regulatory body has allowed this type of work, and it is no understatement to say that the whole world will be watching. The researchers from the Francis Crick Institute in London say the research will, quote, improve embryo development after in vitro fertilization and might provide better clinical treatments for infertility, unquote. The embryos they tend to use will be donated by couples who have excess embryos during IVF. And importantly, these embryos will not be grown to term. Yeah, well, so they say, and will simply be used to study the early stages of embryonic development before being destroyed. The team will use a gene editing tool. Yes, our favorite, the CRISPR-Cas9, to turn certain genes on and off in very early stages of human development and then study the effects that these changes have on the development of the embryo. It is essential to the study of function of these genes in humans in the context of the embryo in order to fully understand their roles. The CRISPR-Cas9 technique works like a biological cut-and-paste tool. And if you've seen the actual tool itself, it's just a software application where you can like Lego, clip, 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 paste, 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 and make different genes. It's pretty nuts. Where researchers use a protein to seek out a particular gene and cut it out of the genome, replacing it with DNA of their choice. For example, they could swap a defective gene for a healthy one, and this technique has been around for the past 3 years, but in recent months, it has become a lot cheaper and easier to use. Yes, it's the same technique that Chinese researchers use to edit the genome of their embryos, and as a result, there has been a strong push for a moratorium on all research using CRISPR-Cas9. The fear is that if these embryos could grow to term, their new traits would be heritable. Yeah, like letting the genie out of the bottle like they've already done in nature with crops. And researchers would have crossed a major ethical boundary. But fuck it, we don't have ethics, right? Let's just be mad scientists and anything goes. And an outright ban has already been put in place in the U.S. Or again, so they say. You know, an outright ban, what does that mean? You're not going to get federal funding? But who's to say that some lunatic scientist isn't doing this in some dark back room at some pharmaceutical company? You know, I mean, you know that they are. We found out back 4 years ago that there were hundreds, I believe. It was a few hundred chimeras, human-animal hybrids already growing in petri dishes in the UK. I covered that story when it first came out, and nobody knew it. It was found after the fact. But earlier this month, a group of leading scientists issued a joint statement against the moratorium. Oh, no. Suggesting that CRISPR-Cas9 technique was could also be used for incredible research. And we believe that the genome editing technologies may hold significant potential for clinical applications in the future, and we would be open to supporting the development of new therapeutic approaches should that evidence from research advance sufficiently justify its use. And you know they're going to win. You know they're not going to ban it because we have all this precision healthcare that's going on right now. We have the FDA that wants to fast-track all of these treatments because they're life-saving, and it's all in the name of research. I will guarantee you that they're not going to ban this CRISPR technology. It says, while there is no word yet as to what the decision will be in the UK, if there's any place this type of research would be approved other than China, it is the UK, where the controversial, oh, here we go, three-parent IVF technique has already been allowed. So that was in the UK. They did the three-parent egg. And guess what, guys? We're going to have to continue this tomorrow because we only have about 10 seconds left. I can't believe how fast these hours go. Make sure you stick around. Ms. Lonnie Clark is up next. We have Josh live at 6 tonight. The boys from New York at 8 p.m. Eastern. April and Verstein at 9. And at 11, Anti Media with Nick and Devine. Everyone have an awesome Wednesday. Catch up with you tomorrow.